Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? It's your boy, James Lopez, representing for the dope dads of the Fatherhood is Lit community. Being involved in your child's education is one of the dopest things we can ever do. But how do we actually get involved? This week, I got my homie, Derek Phillips, who was an assistant principal in New York City and now runs the Real Dads Network. What's up, Derek? Thank you for being here.
Hey, James. What's going on, man? Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me this evening, this afternoon.
Yeah, man. You know, I wanted you here because, actually, before anything, let's do this real quick. Before anything, being born and raised in the Bronx section of New York City and even teaching for a year, I know how valuable it is to see a male in action like yourself when it comes to education. So thank you, bro, because it's kind of rare. I don't think I had too many male teachers growing up, male teachers or admins. And I think it would have made a difference. So I wanted to have you here because you did the teaching side, you did the admin side, you know, you did it in New York City, which is not going to be super easy. Dads are more involved now, man. So I wanted to talk about how we could help dads really get fully engaged in their child's education. Is that cool?
Yes, that's great.
All right, cool. So how long were you an assistant principal? Let's set someone.
I was an assistant principal for 10 years, and I actually was in a classroom for 17.
Whoo! So 27 in total, man. That's you weren't playing, bro. Listen, before we recorded this, you told me, man, it's been a while since I was a principal. It's been 2 years. Come on, dude. 27 years, bro. 27 years.
Everything has been wrapped up with Real Dads. It's like, man, that 2 years seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, man, but you, like I was saying, man, like, you know, teacher in New York City, man, in a year you get to see a lifelong time of craziness, man. Like you get to see a lifetime.
You see a lot, and just in regards to just what happens with, you know, just the students, you know, and the teachers, you know, especially from the administrative side, because from the administrative side, you know, my responsibility really was to go into classrooms and observe teachers. Observe their teaching practices, you know. So I would sit in the classroom in the back, and I'm writing up, you know, how they're teaching, you know, their practices. And they didn't like a lot of my reports, you know, because I had to say, listen, you know, you have students in the classroom who need to learn, and you can't just sit up there and just write stuff on the board all day. You got to actually engage them in conversation. You got to actually also listen to what they have to say. So when you ask a question, you can't ask low-level questions. You have to ask high-level questions, and then when you ask your questions, you got to just shut up and wait for the response.
Mm-hmm. And see what,
but
and then go from there.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. So teaching is, it's a very difficult job, you know, but when I was teaching, I enjoyed all my years of teaching. I mean, and the thing is that I still have students, man, that I still keep in contact with to this day. I have students in there. 40s, 30s, you know, that I'm still in contact with on a regular basis, you know, because, you know, when you're teaching, you know, in order to move students, it's really about, relationships, you know. And when I started my classroom, you know, I used to tell students the first day of class, I'm the teacher, you're the student, take that concept, throw it out the window. I'm a human being, and I'm here to learn as well as you, and we're going to learn from each other.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to listen to what you have to say, and what you say matters to me. And if you're saying something, you know, that sounds good, like when I was teaching my math class, they would do it a different way. And I'm like, oh, what? You know what, John? We're going to use your way.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to empower students, and that's how they learn.
All right. So this might sound a little funny, right? But teachers, just like parents, they want all the kids to succeed. The dynamics between us and our children's teachers can really, really make a difference, right? So how should a father approach a teacher? Because it seems like sometimes, especially dads, they're kind of afraid of teachers. Like, what's going on here? Like, how do we break that?
With dads, it's like sometimes, you know, you have a situation where sometimes people feel as though that's the teacher and they know everything. And, they may have a degree, and I don't necessarily have a degree.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think sometimes, you know, men fall into that category of feeling that way. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I tell fathers and I tell these parents, you are really their first teacher.
Yep.
You know, you are the primary teacher. So even when you're sending them to school, you know, the school is just really the secondary educator. You're still primary. So you never lose that role of the primary educator. So when you're stepping into, open school night to meet with a teacher, you know, you're still the lead. Mm. You're the lead educator.
Oh, so it's all about the mindset where maybe some dads are intimidated because they feel that the teacher's in control now. Like the teacher rules the classroom, so she rules this situation. And it's like, yeah, no.
And it's like, nobody know your child better than you.
Yeah, and I think...
You know, nobody know your child better than you.
Do you think that happens because a lot of us send our kids to, like, public schools? Like, does it have anything to do with that? Like, where we feel like, you know, we can't boss them around? Like, I'm not saying that we should boss them around, but it almost feels like we don't stand on the same level, I guess. Like, is that because... You know, because I guess I'm trying to say is that if a child goes to private school, I'm pretty sure these parents are, like, really on top. Maybe not really on top, but they letting themselves be known, right? Where they're telling a teacher, hey, I don't like this, or I do like this, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, statistically, you know, it's also shown that statistically, especially in some of the New York City schools, a lot of the parents are not involved, especially, you know, dads are really not involved. Mm-hmm. So that is, statistically, that is a fact. And then when you get to the private schools, you know, the parents tend to be maybe more involved because they're also paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. You know, I mean, you're paying for it. You might as well get involved, right? But I'm sure, I'm a doubt. Well, we all know a lot of parents don't get involved even after they pay. They got the nanny for that, man. Yeah, because it's one of those things that, like, I taught for a year in the Bronx. And, you know, like, it was different to talk to males. As a teacher, where, like, I would see the males and even the females go crazy and, like, say these outlandish things to, like, the female teachers or the older teachers. And then the minute a male stepped up, it was like, what? Like, all right, let me calm down a little bit. And it was like, man, dog, like, you know, you got to treat us all the same because we're treating you the same. Well, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of different.
Yeah, it's like what you said as well. It's that, you know, a lot of times we didn't grow up having male teachers. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you don't grow up having male teachers, you see a male teacher's like, wow, especially if it's like, you know, a black, black or brown male of teacher, like, whoa, we don't see that.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that's like, wow. So automatically, you know, you walk in there as a teacher, you automatically get that respect.
Yes.
It's that first moment.
It's weird.
But the key is to hold that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and a lot of people don't hold it because, you know, it requires now for you to do the work where you got to really invest, you know, in students. You got to invest in them. You know, I mean, one of the things that I used to always do is that, you know, I always gave kids my number. The students had my home number.
Wait, your regular number? The students had it?
Yes, I gave the students my home number. They know they have my home number.
How many students did you have at a given time? Like 2,000 in the building?
We had, so it was always like an alternative school. So we may have like 300 students.
Okay.
300, sometimes 400 students. But they all had students. I gave my number. Mm. You know, I mean, even there were things happening with students, you know, that wasn't even school related. You know, they would call me.
Wait, so basically, you know? Basically, this is what we were talking about a while back. Like, you were, to a lot of the kids, you were also a positive male role model then, or male figure, right? Like a father figure. Because they're still calling you.
Yeah, and I looked at them, and when I had my students in class, they were my children. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was always my mindset, that they were my children. Mm-hmm. You know, so regardless of what's happening, you know, these are my kids. So if anything is going on, here's my number. You know, and I had a certain relationship and a certain respect for them. You know, like I would tell, you know, students, you know, when they come to my office, I would meet with someone on a one-on-one, and I would say, listen, this is how this is going to go. I need you to give me permission to get up in your face. Mm. You know, because if you're off course and you're not doing what you're supposed to do, I need the permission from you to get up in your face. But you need to understand that it's coming from love. Yeah. You know, I want you to succeed. So I'm in your face because you're off track. But you got to give me that permission. So when I get up in your face, you don't come back at me. Mm-hmm. Or do understand that when you're with your friends and stuff like that, I'm going to respect the fact that you're with your friends. I'm not going to try to embarrass you, you know, but when I get up in your face, you got to understand, like, yo, I got it. Because you're coming up in my face like this, I did something wrong, and I need to listen. But you got to allow me to do that. But if you don't allow me to do that, then I can't help you.
It almost sounds like straight up fatherhood. You know, you look at your kids and, you know, yes, we could get up into their face whenever we want. Yes, we created them. But we also want to give them that space where it's like, is it okay? Right. Do I have your respect that I could do this to you? So it sounds like being a principal, you know, being a positive male role model to these kids, it was almost like you were playing your role as a father in the school.
Yeah. And that is who you are. It's like, yeah. those are my children. Yeah. And they know those are my children. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would do anything. I would do the same thing for my kids at home that I would do for them. And as a matter of fact, they all knew my children as well.
Yeah. Did you ever have like a father that just didn't understand that you were there to help and took that the wrong way, where they where they might have came and said, "Hey, man, you're not my child's father," and it's like, "Nah, chill, man. Like, I'm not trying to do that."
No, because, you know, the thing is also is that one of the things that happens when you start dealing with education, especially in New York City, one of the things that I loved open school night. Mm-hmm. You know, I loved open school night because I loved to meet the parents. Mm-hmm. You know, where a lot of the other teachers were afraid, oh, my gosh, the parents are coming up. I got to meet so-and-so's parents, so-and-so's parents. It's going to be difficult. No, because when you're honest and you're upfront and people know where you're coming from, you don't have to worry about that. So the fathers, the mothers, they all knew, listen, he's there. You got to listen to what Derek is saying because he knows what he's talking about. He's there for you. And mm-hmm. I would call them on a regular basis. Now, one of the things that I did to build a relationship with the parent is I was very intentional where a lot of times I would call the parent when the child did something good.
I like that. Because we always complain. You know what? Before you even go forward, bro, I had something happen with my son, my middle son. He went to a really, really good school on Staten Island, a really good middle school. And they not once called me to tell me how great of a student he was. He graduated, pretty top of the class. They not once did they call me for that. But that one day they did call me senior year to tell me that his sweatpants didn't have the school logo on it. That he was going to go to detention. And, you know, me, I don't know. I'm a father. To me, it's like, oh, man, when I get him, I'm going to talk to him. We're going to fix this. Not my wife. My wife jumped on the phone. She was like, wait a minute. This is not in your rule books. You want us to buy sweatpants from your school store that don't even exist right now. How are you reprimanding him for this? And, yo, by the way, did you ever call me to tell me he's a great student?
Nope.
So we expect you to call us for the worst things. Maybe that's the problem with the communication and the and how we deal with each other, right, in the relationship.
See, and that's where everything boils down to relationships, you know. So it's like, and children know that as well. So, and they're like, hold on, you never call when I do something right.
Yeah, yeah, man.
You know, and even if the kid did something wrong, and I call the parent. You know, then I'll call him back later. You know what? Listen, I know I called you last week, you know, well, Johnny, you know, wasn't doing what he was supposed to, but this week, yo, he's just been on point. He's been in class, raising his hands and paying attention. Then I also do the follow-up. So if I'm going to call you about something that's bad, then I'm going to do the follow-up to say it was corrected.
Yo, that's a life lesson, man. That's a life lesson. Like, a lot of people like to call and complain or complain about things that are going wrong, but they never come with a solution.
Yeah. See, you know, and that's why I say for me, when you're teaching, and it's not just teaching, it's just like, this is my thing for life. Everything is built on relationships. You have to be able to build relationships and make connections. That's the only way you get people or anything to move, but you have to build relationships.
So let's go.
You have to be able to connect.
So let's go back a little bit then. You know, I'm a dad that I'm fully involved, but let's say I'm a dad that's not, that I don't know how to do this, right? What's my first line of communication with a teacher? Like, is it walking in the first day of school and introducing myself? Is it an email? Like, or is it whatever's comfortable for me?
Everything always boils down to, you know, your comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
It's your comfort level, one, but two, it's also stepping out of your comfort zone. Because sometimes we get too comfortable. And it's like, we got to understand that, you know, we are the lead. So we're in this partnership. You're in this partnership with the school. As a parent, but at the end of the day, you are the lead. You're the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just your supporting cast.
Yeah.
So when you step in there, and that's a mindset. So when you step in there, it's like, hold on, the boss is here. The boss is here. So you're the lead. And when you go in there, you know, you're not going in there like, oh, hi, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? I just want to check on my son. How's everything going? You know, and you're having that communication with the teacher. Yeah. And also with the principals. When they have those principal breakfast meetings, whenever you can make it, make it.
Yeah.
Build that relationship with the principal. Know who the principal is. Know the assistant principals and know the teachers. One of the things that I would say, I have this thing called a fatherhood challenge. Mm. So when I was giving a speech to fathers, I'm like, okay, I'm going to give you this challenge. How many of you know every one of your students' teachers' names?
Who? That's a good one. That's a good one. I'm gonna say at least half of them failed, man.
Yeah, you know. So, and it's, so that's the first thing, right? So it's like get to know. And the good thing about that exercise is knowing all the names of your child's teachers is that it also allows you to engage in a conversation with your child.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now when you're speaking to your child, you can ask your child. So who's your master? What's your son's teacher's name? So now the follow-up later when you're having a conversation with your child is like, so how are you doing in Mr. Smith's math class? You know Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
You know the name, so it changes the conversation.
Oh, I'm gonna call Mr. Smith and ask him. And that always sends them straight. Now, you're right, because that's, like, I think the thing I'm trying to dispel with this episode is that we overthink things. Like, for you to be involved is as simple as saying hi. And the minute you say hi to the teacher, you figure out, all right, are we going to be cordial enough to email, or am I going to be okay enough to ask her if we should do email? Should we do pupil path? Whatever the hell they're using. And it all begins with that first initial discussion. After you talk to the teacher, you meet everybody else.
I would email them because, again, at the end, I would email them. And if they don't respond, and then you go to their principal. And I would say, if they don't respond to your email, then you go to their principal.
Yeah.
And you send the next email if you have to, CCing the principal.
Yeah. No, it works for you. And it works because you leave yourself a paper trail, but also it's the easiest thing to do. Like, some people just don't like to do it in person. So when they send you that school note telling you, yo, your child is in class 301, 401, whatever it is, the email's there, man. Just email them. It's really that simple. Yeah. And you don't even got to pack an email. I treat it like business, where I don't want 10 pages of an email. I just want three lines. And that's what I do with my teachers, where I write to them, hey, you know, I'm such and such as dad. He's in your class for this grade. You know, I just want to know what's the rubrics. What's the expectations for this month or for this year? And that's it. I don't need nothing else. I'm not telling them how cool my sneakers are. What's the last movie we saw? None of that. Just, this is straight to business.
And what that does is that you're holding them accountable because you're also setting expectations early on. So when I email you, I expect you to email me back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how many students you have in your class. I expect you to email me back. And if you don't email me back, then the next email is going to be to the principal. You're going to be CC'd on the next email.
Mm-hmm. And what's
because
too much?
As an administrator,
what's too much, though?
You know what? The thing is this. Again, at the end of the day, the goal is, what do we all need to do in this partnership between the parent? What I have to do, like, we used to have our open school night. Admissions for students, and the parents would meet with them. And I would tell the parents, and I'll tell the parents and students there, I'm like, listen, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I am very competitive, and I want to win in the worst way. And for me, when I look at a student that's coming into my high school, I want to win the chip. And the chip for me is their high school diploma. That's the chip. And I tell the students, you are the star of this team. You are the LeBron James of this team. We are your supporting cast. So as a supporting cast, we're going to do whatever we have to do to get you to where you need to be so we can win the chip. So we can all celebrate and have our parade, which would be graduation when you win the chip.
Ooh,
that's your high school diploma.
I love the analogies, man. This was perfect. Like, that's what it's about right there. You know what I mean? Breaking it down where a father doesn't feel like it's a crazy burden. You know what I mean?
No.
Where it's like, this isn't your duty, but it's your duty, right? Where it's like, you want to be involved, but you want to be involved because the overall win it's much bigger than you just being there. Now you got so many other things. Like, I love being able to go to my kid's school and a teacher knowing my name, but also knowing that if it's an issue, I've heard them say, oh yeah, that's Mr. Lopez. Watch how he talks to his kid. Like, watch how he talks to him. Watch how he fixes this. And then when I leave there, I'll go back to the teacher and they'll be like, yeah, we knew you were going to take care of that. You know, and it's like, man, this feels good. It feels good that you trust me.
And that's part of it, because we're all part of the same team. We're all on the same team, you know, when you're working together. And that's why when you have teachers who really understand their role and understand what their job is, they don't have a problem with parents being involved. They don't have a problem reaching out to parents because it's like, listen, we're on the same team.
Yeah, yeah. So to have some fun with it, man, like, since you were assistant principal for a while, did you ever have a moment when a kid came to the school and didn't want to be there, and now you have to talk to the parents? Like, how would you convey the message of being there to a parent?
Well, where the kid doesn't want to be there and have to try to convince the parent that the kid needs to stay here?
Yeah, like, you know, the younger kids, it's harder because they cry, but then, like, you had older kids, and I'm sure now as they get older.
My kids were, like, 16 to 21.
Yeah, now they become little grown people, right? So how do you convey to their parents that, you know, little Johnny can't be cut in class anymore? And this is why it matters. Because I know where I came from, sometimes there was parents that would just say, all right, screw little Johnny, man. Like, I've been telling him go to school, and he just doesn't go to school.
You know what I tell the parents a lot of times, you know, again, I just go back to, listen, we're all on this team together, you know, and we all have to work together. You know, and I tell the parents another important thing is that I said, you know what, have conversations with your child. You know, one of the biggest things that I think that parents tend not to do is, again, communicate. So I'm like, my wife has been really good with this whole concept. Not me, I got it from her, but my wife has been really good where at dinner, we have to sit down and eat as a family.
Okay.
She's big on that. The whole family have to sit there and eat and have discussions. So what I tell families, like, listen, you guys need to sit down, try to make it a habit every night of sitting at the table and eating. Because when you're doing that, what you're developing is you're developing communication skills. When you're talking to each other, you're getting to know your child, and you're engaging in a conversation with your child. Because one of the biggest issues is that a lot of parents don't know their children.
And they think
they don't really engage in conversation, and they think they do.
Yeah.
You know, and then allow your child to engage in a conversation where, you know what, they may say some things that you may not like, but you got to allow them that room to grow and say, you know, we're engaging in a conversation. So know your child. And I also tell parents, when your child comes home from school, look in their book. Open their book and see what they're learning and ask them questions. Don't ask, like,
no matter the age.
So what did you do today? Yeah, look in their books.
Wait, what about when people say, like, I've heard a lot of teachers say, don't ask your kids what they learned today. Like, be more specific.
What you should be more specific and say, you know, explain to me what you did today.
Mm-hmm.
Explain what you did.
So it's like not giving them like a multiple choice question, but more like a open-ended.
No, open-ended, because that's the whole thing is that you want to be able to engage in a conversation with your child. And that's all, like, when I'm observing teachers in their lessons, I tell teachers, you can't ask low-level questions.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ask these questions. So when was such and such a date? No, engage in a conversation. Have them explain their thought process. And listen, that's why I say the most important thing for teachers as well as parents is to ask the question and then shut up and wait for the answer.
Yeah, is that the same for a parent that might, you know, want to get involved and just doesn't feel like they have the answers? Like, you know, they have to do math homework and they're afraid to ask or tell the teacher, hey, you know, I just don't understand this stuff.
You know, and that's a good thing is that you don't have to understand it. So you can ask your child to explain. Because sometimes people, your child learns things by you not knowing it and they having to explain it to you.
Mm. And what if your child doesn't know it then? How do you approach going back to the teacher and saying, hey, you know, I don't get it, without feeling like a loser?
Well, and that goes back to just, you know, building a relationship, you know, and understanding your role and understanding that, you know what, when your kids get past a certain level in terms of grade level, there's certain things you may not even understand.
Yeah. all the time.
you may not understand it. So, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know. And so, you know what? That's just not my area. I don't understand it. So, you know what? Let's talk to the teacher. Let me email the teacher. Or why don't you go and email the teacher? Or can you talk to one of your friends or something? You know, we don't have to always feel as though we don't always have to have the answer. But it's, you know, it's part of us that we need to know how to get the answer.
Yeah, and how to, and then ultimately you have to remember, you know, why you're doing it. Where it's like, hey, yeah. I might not understand this common core math, but, you know, I want my son to understand it for like that. He's not out here looking foolish. you want him to grow. You want him to learn. And it's like, you know, if it's going to take me feeling like a loser by asking for something that I don't understand, then so be it. You know, who cares? Like, yeah. He still wins anyway.
And the child still wins. And you're never a loser. You know, you're always winning when you are trying to learn and grow. Whenever you're growing, you're always winning. Mm-hmm. So part of growing is that you don't have to know it. That's the beauty of it. You don't have to know it, but you have to be open to learning and open to getting the answers and open to asking questions. The most powerful tool in the world are questions. So you brought up the Common Core. So the reason why we have Common Core is because a lot of our kids are graduating, and then the education department went to these companies saying, how come you're not hiring my kids? Mm. This is, well, because they don't ask questions.
What?
They don't really ask questions, because when you're teaching them, you don't really teach them to really think and ask questions.
Mm. You're thinking
you
them just
teach
to
them
solve.
To memorize stuff.
Yeah, it's a memorizing and then just
to memorize.
Yeah.
So if I'm hiring somebody, so what's happening is that, you know, they're looking for these, you know, they were hiring a lot of people from different countries, because what's happening is that if I'm going to have you sell my product, and I'm giving you my product to go to someone to sell, and then I need you to ask questions. So, James, what color, here's this shirt, James, what color do you like? It's black. I kind of like blue. Okay. So, James, do you like the stripes? Not really. I don't really like the stripes. James, so I'm asking you all these questions. So you're giving me all these, you know, things that you like. So now when I go back to the office, I'm like, okay, this is what James likes. So when we start dealing with these clients, and you get that information by asking questions.
Mm-hmm. Customer development.
Yeah. So if you don't ask questions, then you're not going to solve any problems.
Oh, you see, I thought, you know, to be honest, I never looked into Common Core. I just dealt with it. And it makes more sense now if the goal of it is to get your kids to think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I looked at it and I looked at Common Core and I'm like, man, why are they learning so many ways to do this? You know, he's having trouble keeping up with one of the ways. And then after a while, it's like, man, it's almost like computer science. In computer science, they teach you the same thing. Like, you take one problem and you turn it into many little ones, you know, to make it easier to solve. And it's just a way of thinking.
So yeah, it's a way of thinking. And that's why the big thing with Common Core is questioning, also problem solving, and also teamwork. That's why a lot of times in the classes, and I tell the teachers when I'm observing them, when I walk into your classroom, I don't want to just see you teaching. It's not about you. I want to see you not as a teacher, but as a facilitator, where you're facilitating learning, where the kids are working in groups and they're learning from each other, not just you sitting up there dictating for a whole period. What did the students learn?
Yeah.
You know, and then what people got to understand as well, education, when we were growing up, you know, it was, a teacher, and your teacher would say, well, I taught this lesson, and I don't understand how come they didn't get it. It's not about what you teach. It's about what they learn. It is called today teaching and learning.
Yeah.
So just because you taught it, but if they didn't learn it, then you didn't teach it right.
Yeah, it's true. Because they actually got to put it to use.
Yeah, they
can't put it to use, and they didn't learn it. They didn't learn it.
And you can say, well, I taught this. And this is what I used to do with my observations. I go into the classrooms, you know, and a lot of teachers, you know, I sit in the back, I take my notes, you know, and a lot of times my observations, when I wrote my observations back, a lot of times what I put in my reports is that you have to ask high-level thinking questions. You have to engage the students in conversations. You have to sit back and you have to listen when you ask your questions, and you can't ask multiple questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give them
ask
one
a question,
six.
Get an answer. Yeah.
Yeah, so
you know, so but
I mean, but that's for the teacher side, right? I guess the same could be applied for the parenting side and for the fatherhood side, right? Yeah. Because you got to do the same thing. Like, if you're teaching something and then apply it. But what about when you as the parent don't want to take the time to go through the hassle of teaching something, right? Like, let's say your child needs to practice their multiplication table, right? You rather play video games. Did you ever run into parents that chose like the video game over the lessons?
You're going to have parents who don't really understand their responsibilities and what it is they have to do. But the thing is that as a parent, you don't have to be the primary. So your role is the lead. Mm-hmm. So as the lead, you can say, you know what? I'm going to get someone else who can help you with that. Because maybe I'm going to play my video game. Mm-hmm. So you find the resource. You know what? You're having trouble in math, but maybe I need to hire a tutor. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to go to the school and see what are the support services that they have available. So now I'm going to go up and speak to the principal, speak to your teacher, speak to the guidance counselor. Do you have any other support services here? Because my child is struggling. Ooh, my child is struggling in science.
Oh, you just touched upon a touchy topic, man. A touchy topic there. Like, reaching out for services. Like, that's one of those things that parents, not just dads, just parents, you know, women and fathers, right? They have issues reaching out for services. And I got this firsthand with my second child. He needed speech therapy. And when I went to sign him up, they pitched me everything. Before they could even finish pitching me everything, I was like, yo, whatever it takes to help him, I'm down. Every single person in that room gave me that look like, what? Like, you're okay with this? And it was like, I wasn't supposed to be okay with this. Like, it was like happiness for them. Why is it that we as parents don't want to get these services for our kids sometimes? Like, what's holding people back?
And I think it's a lot of it what you said too in regards to people feeling as though, you know, I may not be smart. I don't want to feel like, you know, dumb. Like, mm-hmm. I should have known that. You know, my kid doesn't know this or that because of me. You know, at the end of the day, and this is what parents got to understand, at the end of the day, it's not about you. You're not that big. You're not that important.
I'm telling you, Derek, it was insane. Like, I'm sitting in this office, and I'm just rethinking about this now as we're talking about it. And it was crazy. It was like they just ran into a unicorn. Or some other magical creature where it was like, where is this person? How did he even show up? They care. They actually want to send their kids to speech. And to me, it was like, man, y'all willing to give them free services to help them? Yo, sign me up, man. Like, what? Let's do this. And they took it as finally. And I could not believe it. I could not believe that parents are afraid to accept those type of services.
Now, on a whole, you have a lot of teachers who really go into teaching because they really want to make a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, so in a lot of times when you're asking for help, they are more than willing to help. Mm-hmm. And we do have some that, you know, who just really should not be in a classroom as well. I'm going to speak because I've been in there for 27 years. You have a lot of teachers who should not be in a classroom as well. Mm-hmm. But on a whole, you have a lot of them who really want to help and who get, you know, they're thrilled and they get the joy out of just seeing their kids move forward, their kids learning.
Yeah. I think that's a part that a lot of the parents forget. Like, a lot of, you know, we're always on the move and because we're seeing so many things thrown at us at one time, I think we forget that the teachers, the bulk of them are there to actually help. And
yeah,
I think as fellas, sometimes we got to like drop the pride. And things like speech services or extra help in school, that doesn't make your child or yourself a loser. Like, that actually means that you care. You know, you actually care about helping them grow. Like, who the hell cares? Yeah, like, I remember in the 80s, people used to be like, man, you take a cheese bus. Yo, I'm taking a bus to school while you're walking. Who cares? Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, who cares? And it just doesn't make sense, man. Like, I hope in the future, a lot of fathers, now that they're doing a lot more events like Bring Your Father to School Day and things like that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that a lot of parents, especially dads, could like let go some of that ego. you know, and understand that it's to help your child.
You know, that is huge what you're saying right now. That is so huge. And now it's just making me think about, you know, the fact that so many of us as men, we hold on to, we have that ego. So, and a lot of us are really dealing with a lot of issues, and a lot of us are dealing with our own traumas. And a lot of us as men need help in regards to therapy. So we don't want to help ourselves by getting therapy because we feel that that's a sign of weakness. So therefore, we tend to pass that down to our child, that thought process that, you know, so we tend to act accordingly. Well, they don't need the support. They don't need any help because we may need help, but we start saying we're not getting the help. So therefore, we don't think our children are entitled to the same help.
Yeah, and I think that's where, I think that's, yo, perfect segue, man. I think that's where your crew comes into play, man. This is where your organization comes into play, the Real Dads Network, because I think as men and as fathers, you know, sometimes the ego and the pride does get in the way, right? And the way that we get therapy is just by being around other dope fathers, right? Yeah. Like we don't, that's the easiest way to get therapy when you don't want to go to a therapist. You just go, yep. You join a crew and y'all talk. And next thing you know, the questions that are in your head are being thrown around in the conversation, man. And you get all your answers that way.
And that's what it's been like, you know, with the meetings, the club meetings, you get a lot of that information. But also what has been very powerful in regards to the clubs is that it's also made it okay to get help, whether it's through this group or not. So you have men, we're in that group, and men say, listen, I've been going to therapy for 20 years. I've been going to therapy for 10 years. And it's like, hold on, you've been going to therapy for 10 years, 15? And that's normal? Yes, it's normal. There's nothing wrong with you. And you're looking at this person, wow, but you're a man. Yes, I'm a man. I'm a man who knows and understands that I got to take care of me. If I don't take care of myself when I need help, if I'm not taking care of me, how am I going to take care of my family?
Yeah.
How am I really going to be there for you if I need help and I'm not getting it? So, I mean, that group has been very powerful just for me. And I've been in this game for a minute. It's been very powerful for me.
Yeah, no.
You know, because you're seeing it's like, you know, men just haven't been vulnerable. And you're saying, you know, this is normal. It's normal to get help if you need help. There's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, and if you're not cool with doing the asking, just being in the situation, like seeing others do it, it makes things so much easier. Like, I know some people that are just too cool for it. They're just too cool to ask for help. But when they sit in these group conversations, they get all the help that they need.
Yeah.
Without having to say a damn thing. They could just hit mute on their phone. Hit mute on the phone, and an hour later, they're like, oh, man, that was me. Like, I dealt with that before. This is perfect. And it's like, man, I guess that's, fellas, right? The fellas are difficult sometimes, but we seem to be breaking out of it, and I think you can see that at events like Bring Your Father to School. You know what I mean? Like, I think now men are comfortable being around other males without having to prop themselves up. Where it's like, nah, I'm actually here representing my child, not representing who you think I am. You know what I mean? And I think that's really,
it's
really dope.
It's becoming cool. It's cool to be involved.
Yo, it's lit now, man. Everybody want to be down. Everybody want to be down. Everybody wants to throw up a stage photo. And that's why, you know what? I can't hate on the dads that stage their photos. I know sometimes on the podcast I sound like I hate on these influencers. I can't hate on them too much because by them taking these stage photos, it creates real fathers out there and it lets other fathers know that it's okay to take pictures. Where now I'm taking pictures with my son at every little art installation. I would not have done it if it wasn't for a damn influencer. You know what I mean? I didn't care. Those were my memories. Now I'm comfortable with sharing them because I know other fathers will take it and soak it in and do the same.
Yeah. You know? Because people also people are following you as well. So people are following whatever examples that we can put out there that's positive, you know, it's going to help somebody.
Yeah.
It's like you never know who you're going to influence or who you're going to impact by just one little thing. And that's the thing with me, with teaching, is like you never know. You know, you're planting seeds and you never know when it's going to grow.
Yeah.
And you may not even be there to see it.
Yeah, that's going back to the beginning of the conversation. Like you got kids that come back to you now as adults. Like, man, I remember you. Like, that's a dope feeling, man. That's a dope feeling. We all want to be an influence, right? And especially where we come from, like, getting somebody to come back, that makes you, you know, that makes you feel good, man. It feels like you're an influencer. You're, you know, you're the big bro. You're the OG, the uncle, the granddad, whatever they want to call you. But you big, you big, you're a big influence. And that feels really good.
A lot of them also, I have always maintained the relationship, even when I, you know, even throughout their lives, I've sort of always maintained a relationship with them.
So now you were assistant principal for a while, you were teaching for a while, you maintained these relationships. How did you make sure that fatherhood was lit for yourself, for you and your kids? Like, what are some of the things that principals do? Are you guys different? Like, do you guys go hang out somewhere that we don't hang out?
Let me see. Where do we hang out?
Where was one of the places you love taking your kids that always reminding you how blessed you were to be a father and not in school at that day?
Man, you know what? For me, it's like, and I'm glad you said that, because the thing is also is that sometimes we view people and we put people in categories. You know, like I remember when I was little and, you know, you would see a teacher or somebody outside of school. You're like, wow, you guys eat food.
You
like,
wow. You in Great Adventures?
We're all human. We're all human. You know, we're all human. We're all going through the same thing. And it's just that, you know, when you're teaching, sometimes we put just some category. You put people in certain categories. No, we're all fathers. We're all fathers. We're all human. You know, and with my kids, what has been very helpful to me as a teacher are my children. I've learned so much from them.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that alone makes
sense. They've taught me so much.
Yeah, and that's like an everyday activity.
Yeah, I've learned so much from them, and I say to people, I am happy and I love my children. I have two girls, 25 and now 21. I love who they are as people. And I know they are good-hearted people.
Yep.
You know, so wherever they go, people always saying the same thing. They're just good-hearted people. You know, and as parents, you know, and for me, I look at my thing. It's like I didn't have my father. My mother died when I was 10. My father was not around in my life at all growing up. You know, and I grew up in a dysfunctional household where my sister was an alcoholic, my brother was a drug addict, and he died. My other sister was an alcoholic, and she died in the house. Had another sister in a mental institution, in and out of mental institution. So I grew up, I mean, in a dysfunctional household.
By all intents and purposes, you weren't even supposed to be here right now, man. Like,
no,
you weren't supposed to be where you're at, you know?
Yeah, not to mention that I'm retired as an assistant principal. Mind you, I played hooky in the first grade. I played hooky in the second grade, got left back in the second grade, played hooky in the third, played hooky in the fourth.
Yeah.
Eighth grade, I missed 97 days from school, didn't pass not one class, and they still promoted me because of social promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is. I'm an assistant principal where I was running. We had two schools, so I actually ran my own school for 3 years.
Yeah, and changed the lives of hundreds, man. Like, how crazy,
you know,
is that? How crazy is that? Like, how crazy is that? That, you know, sometimes we think we're from, like, the bottom. Like, it gets no worse, right? And we're going to stay down there. And somehow we become some of the best. You know what I mean? It's incredible.
So
it's incredible.
You know, we're just so blessed. And as parents, man, we're just, sometimes as parents, it's just a matter of, you know, and that's why I love at school, you know, I love work the parents. And the parents come up, I'm like, open my door, come in. I got to talk. We got to talk. Even the parents, you know, they have my number.
Mm.
I give the parents my number. I wasn't afraid of somebody calling me. No, call me.
Do you think that your experiences, like as a youngster, is what made you a great teacher? Like, do you think that there was any other profession that you could have done that way gave you this sense of pride?
You know, I was also a caseworker for 3 years. I investigated child abuse and neglect when I first started. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it feels like background, right? Where it's like, mm-hmm. I hate to say this, man. It feels like some of the best educators and the best teachers are the ones that had to deal with some craziness. You know what I mean? And it seems like that. Like, when I went into teaching, it was like, I was born in the hood, raised on welfare. I just wanted to give another kid a chance.
Yeah.
And I didn't care about the pay. I didn't care about the principals, none of that. It was more just, I want to be here and show this kid that somebody cares. And I don't think, I think if I would have been blessed to, you know, be rich and famous, I don't think I would have became a teacher, man. Because I would have never had that experience where I wanted to help people like that, you know?
And I think that's a big, and I'm glad you said that, because I think that is a big part of it. So, you know, how we, what we grew up with, you know, so like, even like looking at you, you know, in regards to your kids and stuff, you're like, yo, listen, you are there, you are there, you know, and a lot of it has to do with your experiences as well. It's like, you know, and I don't know all of your experiences, but it's like, listen, there are a lot of things in my life, you know, you're like, maybe you didn't have, but you said, listen, when I have my children, I'm going to make sure that they have everything that I didn't have.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's, that's what it is. Like, I was raised with my pops. I love my pops, but you know, he had his flaws too. So to me, it was, I'm gonna be better than him. And he, even though he was great, I still got another bar to go. You know, another level to go. And hopefully, that same thing will, you know, happen with my kids. Where now they'll say, "Hey, well, my dad was always there, but what can I do to make it even better?"
Yeah, you know, make my presence felt. And you're there, and that's why it's like, you know, the most important thing you can do with your child is what, you know, and you show that example, and I see it all the time. Spend time with your child.
Yeah, man.
You know, just spend time.
And it doesn't have to be boring.
Enjoy time.
It doesn't have to be boring. You know how we do. You know how we roll. We have some fun.
With the boys, man. I see with the boys in the pictures, I'm like, yo, they're having fun.
Yeah, man, we go, we have a little too much fun, man.
you can see it.
All my friends, they tell us all the time, they'll be like, man, y'all need to have a TV show. And it's like, dogs, I can't deal with somebody following me around, man. I'm not in it for that. Like, I'm in it just to have fun and, you know, help show dads that they can have fun themselves and then hopefully help them find some fun things to do. Like, that's my life mission. The TV stuff, you know, people following you around, man, who cares about that, man? Impact over everything, you know, and you know, yeah, maybe it's bad for business, but it's good for the heart.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, man, it's like, it's, you know, it's what we measure, because sometimes we view things from the wrong lens. You know, the most powerful thing you can do, man, there's nothing more rewarding than helping someone move forward, you know, whether it's as a parent or as an educator, you know, or just, you know, a support person for anyone. That's the most powerful thing in the world that you can ever do.
That's a fact, man. Let's leave it at that, Derek. Man, how can people find you? What's the best way to reach you?
The best way to reach me, you could just go to our Instagram page, at Real Dads Network. You can also go to our website, realdadsnetwork.org.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find them. Real Dads Network everywhere. and they respond to messages, not like these other people.
They do respond. You know, it's all this to work, man. Just everybody. We're just trying to do our part.
Yeah, man.
You know, and we all have the capacity to do something. And I just really appreciate, James, all the stuff that you are doing and the sincerity that you bring to this whole fatherhood space. So I just really appreciate you and everything that you do as well.
I appreciate it, man. You know, hearing it from you guys, you know, I respect few, man. Like, I won't lie. I think people know my brand. They know what I stand for. I don't respect too many dad groups out there or influencers. And you're one of the top people that I don't respect. I love. Like, you know, you call me, you need anything. If I can make it happen, it's done. And that's all respect, all love, because of the impact that you guys do. You know, so keep it up, man. Feelings mutual, man, for real.
That.
Impact over everything. I learn from you, man. So don't get it twisted.
You know, I'm there as well.
Yeah, man. I respect the people that paved the way, man, and you paved it, man. So thank you so much, for real.
Thanks, man.
To the dads out there, kids love showing dads how dope they are, especially in school. We might not have all the right answers, but our presence is needed in our children's education. And Derek Phillips of the Real Dads Network just told us why and how we can make our presence felt the right way. If you need more help, don't hesitate to join the Dads Network or hit me up or hit up Derek. We got you. We have your back. Thank you once again, Derek. Fatherhood is lit.